So darkness, darkness, that's just what it is that people are fighting with these SSRIs, and who can blame them? Depression has a way of owning so many bright people, talented people that are just socked with it. They can't get around it. It just sits on top of them and won't let them go. So what's the cause and what's the cure, or at least what can help be a cure for the symptoms of depression if SSRIs are not it? If there's only a placebo effect from that, we'll get back to that next with Dr. Irving Kirsch. The book is The Emperor's New Drugs, Exploding the Antidepressant Myth on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. All right, so Dr. Irving Kirsch, the author of The Emperor's New Drugs, joins us here. It'll be a while before we get to your questions, but they are coming at some point later on in this evening. And I, of course, just ask you to be civil in every way possible on this conversation. And that's because, Dr. Kirsch, a lot of people are very invested in their antidepressants, whether it be the doctors who administer them or their patients. We're literally talking about millions and millions of people who take the pills, believe in the pills, and thousands of doctors who would hate the thought that they've been giving away a total placebo. Yes?
Yeah, that's true. And for a patient, what I would have to say is, look, if you're taking an antidepressant and it's working for you and you're happy with it and you're not troubled by the side effects, then keep taking it by all means. Why should you question that you're not going to be concerned too much about why it works as long as it does work for you? But what I'm more concerned about are the people who take antidepressants and don't get enough benefit from it, or people who take antidepressants and get side effects that are intolerable, or people who take them get better and then get worse again and go into this constant cycle of getting better and relapsing. And for these people, I would think it makes sense to look for alternatives to antidepressants.
All right. Well, I want to hear more about that French drug, but before I do, back up for a second, though. Doesn't if you're telling people who are on the drugs right now, stay on the drugs if they're working for you, it's a great placebo, won't the effect of the placebo immediately start to diminish the second they start to think of it as a placebo?
Well, I think a lot of people don't think of it as a placebo. Right. My reading of the data is that it has to be largely or probably entirely a placebo effect. Maybe I'm wrong. I certainly don't want to take options away from people. I'm more interested in opening up options. If it's working for you, take it. We don't have to wonder about whether it's a placebo or not. And I know people that they've read this. They are depressed. It seems to work for them. And that's their attitude. I don't know whether it's a placebo effect or not, but I know it works for me. And I'm not bothered by the side effects. So I'm going to go back to taking them, or I'm going to continue taking them.
Right. Okay. You were talking about the French drug just before the top of the hour. That,
yes,
there's a new drug that's been licensed in France that's different than the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. This is a different kind of formulation.
Right. This is a selective serotonin reuptake enhancer. It does exactly the opposite of what the SSRIs are supposed to do. It's an SSRE instead of an SSRI. Instead of making more serotonin available in the brain, it makes less serotonin available in the brain.
Okay.
So now you have drugs that increase serotonin, drugs that decrease serotonin, and drugs that do nothing to serotonin at all being offered as antidepressants.
Okay, that should be a huge clue that they don't know what the hell they're talking about.
It certainly should, and if you want the clue to become even larger, what you have to look is the outcome of the clinical trials where they test these drugs, and the outcome is that they all have the exact same effect. They affect the exact same number of people. If you do an antidepressant trial and you give people SSRIs, 60% get better. If you give them drugs that don't affect serotonin at all, 60% get better. And if you give people this strange new drug that has the exact opposite effect of SSRIs, 60% get better. It's almost uncanny how similar the percentages are in terms of what how many people get better, regardless of what drug you give them. And that suggests it can't be something in the drug that's doing it. It can't be the effect on serotonin.
And so if it's not, if serotonin has nothing to do with this, too much, too little, fat, thinner, one color or another, if serotonin has nothing to do with depression, what does?
A lot of things do. Social factors do. We know that economics affect depression. The unemployment affects depression. Unavailability of decent health care options affects depression. That's something that we've known now for decades. When you have economic cycles, those economic cycles produce a change in depression rates. Things that happen in a person's personal life, individual life, can produce depression. Loss of a loved one can lead to depression.
But when we're talking about depression there, we're talking, that's mental depression? Are we talking, what about physical? Because so much of what we're talking about is this biochemical thing in the brain. Is there any biochemical difference between people who are depressed and people who aren't depressed? Is it just mental?
Well, any time there is something taking place mentally, something is taking place physically. You can take that as a given. So if I'm talking to you and you're hearing my words, things are happening in your brain in response to hearing my words. I'm affecting your brain right now. You're affecting my brain right now. We are affecting the brains of all the listeners out there right now, because any mental state is, in fact, also a state in the brain. We can induce sadness by having people focus on things that happened to them that were very negative in the past, and they can get very, very sad, and we can measure what's happening in the brain, and that causes changes in the brain that are very similar to what you see in the brains of depressed patients.
Okay, but there is no physical change. I'm trying to get an idea about when you talk about the things that cause depression, all right, so all of the bad things that happen in the world can cause to a depressed mental state. Is there any way to treat that depressed mental state physically so that when you adjust the body's physiology, you are then going to have a domino effect on the body's psychology?
Nobody really knows for sure, but there's one hint that it could be, and that is the effects of physical exercise on depression. It's not as well studied as the effects of antidepressant medication, for reasons that I think are economic. Who's going to profit from it? But there have been clinical trials looking at the effect of physical exercise on depression, and the effects you get are about the same as what you get with antidepressants. People get better. They get better doing exercise three times a day, three times a week, 20 minutes a session. It can be aerobic exercise. It can be anaerobic exercise. It doesn't seem to matter, but it has an effect. We don't yet know why it has that effect. It could be a physiological effect. It could be a placebo effect. But just think, if that's a placebo effect, think about the side effects. Side effects of exercise are things like increased sexual function, increased stamina, better muscle tone. Which placebo would you rather have, the antidepressant drug or the physical exercise?
Well, okay, so again, though, if it's a – it's not – it can't be – I mean, there's a – all right. If there was a drug that said, take this pill – and it will have the same effect as though you had exercised five times this week.
Right.
That, based on what you said in the first hour here on in our conversation on Coast to Coast, my impression is that even if they gave you a pill that said this will have the same effect as if you'd exercised five times this week, it couldn't change the body's physiology in that way, right?
Well, again, it depends what's in the drug. Drugs change the body's physiology.
Right.
Everything changes the body.
No, I'm saying a placebo. If they give you a drug and say, here, you could take this, it's equal to five times exercising this week. To go back to what you're saying, there are certain things that placebos can't do. A placebo couldn't probably replicate the benefit of an exercise regimen five times a week.
Probably not, but a placebo can replicate many of the benefits that an antidepressant drug has on a person's brain, and that's been studied, and we know that already.
Right.
That
right.
If you give a depressed person a placebo and they get better, you can see that improvement and changes in the brain, and it's by and large the same changes that you see in people who've gotten better taking the antidepressant.
Oh, no, I get that. I'm just saying, so what's interesting about the exercise is that if somebody's exercising significantly, that the reason why that you could make an argument that it actually is having a change of it's going to change their body chemistry. It can't help but change it because you're increasing your heart rate. You're doing,
right.
You're doing things. So it's the natural way to get that high that people are, or that sense of well-being, I should be a better way to phrase it.
Right.
When somebody's exercising, they start to feel good about themselves. And it's starting to feel good about themselves that ends up being that domino effect that triggers into, I won't be so depressed now.
And that's very likely a mechanism that's involved in how it is that exercise affects depression. Makes it a wonderful treatment. It's cheap,
right.
It's effective, you can carry it with you. And it has all kinds of additional health benefits as well.
What about diet?
There hasn't been as much studied on the effects of diet on depression. I've seen the hypothesis raised. I've looked at a couple of studies that have been done, and basically there's not enough research on it to be able to say anything one way or another with any degree of confidence. There's one other treatment that has excellent credentials, and that's psychotherapy, and in particular forms of psychotherapy. They tend to be short-lasting treatments lasting between 10 and 20 sessions. They tend to be very focused treatments, focused on the depression. The most well-studied one is a form of treatment called cognitive behavior therapy, or CBT. And in the short term, that produces effects that are comparable to those of antidepressants, which means only slightly better than placebo. But in the long term, its effects are really impressive. People who have gotten better through cognitive behavior therapy tend to stay better. They're much less likely to relapse. There's a wonderful study that's studying people who were given 10 weeks of cognitive behavior therapy, depressed patients, and following them up 6 years later, 60% of them are still free of depression, compared to a group who was treated only by drugs and
right.
some supportive counseling, but without the specific therapy, most of whom had relapsed within the first couple of years.
Talk therapy is, I think, very important because it allows you to actually pinpoint or forces you to pinpoint what you may be just sort of dwelling in, but not actually articulating. And so, right? I mean, you're suddenly now you're talking about the cause as opposed to living in the feeling.
Sure. And also it helps you learn skills, cognitive skills, ways of interpreting the world, ways of interpreting the events, ways of interpreting yourself, of understanding yourself that not only make you feel better now, but can be used to deal with negative events when they occur in the future.
Talk therapy helps you pinpoint the triggers for what sends you into downward spirals of negative thought.
That's correct.
Yeah, and I think that's something which some people are reluctant to do, and they much more, and maybe it's an American thing, maybe it's a human thing, I don't know, but where we much prefer, it would seem, to not want to actually talk about the cause. The cause is messy. The cause can be painful. That whatever those triggers can be, they can often be self-revealing, and you might not want to know something about yourself. And so it's just easier to put your thought into a pill, your hope into a pill, so you don't actually have to address the cause, just only the symptoms.
Right, but it doesn't last as long. And it doesn't last as long because it's not just identifying the triggers, but also figuring out ways to cope with them, learning new skills for coping with those triggers and for dealing with them so that they have a different effect on you in the future than they've had in the past.
We're talking with Dr. Irving Kirsch, the author of The Emperor's New Drugs, Exploding the Antidepressant Myth. SSRIs work only as placebos, to sum up, to give you the headline of the book, and that the research, especially from the drug companies themselves, was very revealing. That is to say, the research that they were willing to publish. And the other headline that we get when the deeper you get into this story is the number of studies that work against their claims about the efficacy of these drugs that they simply bury, don't publish, claim never existed. That there's just this huge body of research out there that would have disconfirmed all of the things they were trying to tell the FDA and trying to tell the American public, but they just simply kind of let it drift out into the ether.
No, they had sent those studies to the FDA, but they never made them public. Beyond that, they'd never published them in journals, and the FDA never made them public. And what we had to do, my fellow researchers and I, was to use the Freedom of Information Act, and we went to the FDA, and we were able to obtain, through the Freedom of Information Act, data on all of the trials that the drug companies had sent to the FDA in order to get these drugs approved. And those are the data that we analyzed and allowed us to reach the conclusion that we did. They were all drug company-sponsored data, them doing their best shot at trying to show their drugs being effective, and are being able to look at not only the studies that came out better that they then published, but also the studies that came out not as well and that they did not publish, but were available to us in the FDA data set.
Well, and the FDA knew this, and they made an active decision to not publish that information, to not make that information even available to doctors so that doctors could see that and then decide for themselves whether or not they were going to prescribe that for their patients.
That's absolutely right, and was one of the things that really shocked me going through the FDA files, because here I found an internal memo in the FDA files in which they talk about the information that many of the clinical trials don't show any difference between drug and placebo, that most doctors are not aware of those trials or even the existence of them, and that the office director at the FDA thought that this information was irrelevant, that prescribing doctors didn't need to know it.
All right. I want to get back to that. I want to talk about the government and their involvement, the U.S. government anyway, if not international governments, and their complicity in this conspiracy of silence on the true efficacy rate of these SSRIs. If you had to sum it up, you would say that the placebo effect is the only effect of these SSRIs. The government knew it, and they didn't stop it because there was a lot of money in it, and there's just not that much money coming to the FDA from the exercise and diet industry. We'll get back to that next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. We'll get back to it. Dr. Irving Kirsch, and the Emperor's New Drugs, just what the FDA is responsible for in the cover-up of these antidepressants and creating this multi-billion dollar industry for both here and abroad. On Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. So with the help of a doctor here in the United States, while Dr. Irving Kirsch is in England and using FOIA, they were able to get to these studies, which the folks with the FDA and the drug companies would probably wish they hadn't. These were surveys that were done on the effectiveness of these drugs, these SSRIs, And they showed essentially what became Dr. Kirsch's point, that these were just placebos. They only worked because people believed that they worked, and that there really was no significant actual biochemical difference being made by these drugs except for the side effects. And so the FDA knew this. How early do you think the FDA knew this to be true?
Well, they knew as soon as they started approving drugs that the difference between drug and placebo was relatively small. I think they assumed it was a real difference. I think they were not just being duplicitous about that, but they were honest about that.
At the beginning.
But it was a small difference, and that's what they didn't I've seen that referred to by my colleagues as the dirty little secret in the pharmaceutical literature. And the FDA certainly played their role in keeping it a secret.
Well, okay, but and so we can argue about what's a significant difference in the placebo rate or whatever, but it comes right down to it is, yeah, they kept this to themselves. They didn't tell anybody. And that's only at the beginning. At some point, there starts to be a repetition of these surveys, which if they were interested in putting all the cards up on the table, they could have done that. So it may have not started off being duplicitous, but at some point they were serving the interests of the pharmaceutical industry and not the American consumer.
Well, yeah, there's a couple of things that happened. First of all, these are not just surveys. They're clinical trials. They are the studies which become the basis for approving a medication for prescribing, for allowing doctors to prescribe it or not. And a couple of things happened. One thing that happened was the FDA started receiving government funding to do their work, drug company funding, rather, to do their work. And up there, up to the last I heard, it was about 40% of their budget came directly from the pharmaceutical companies. So that put some pressure on them, and that has led some people in the FDA to regard the drug company rather than the American people as their client, the person they have to please, the person they have to work for. The other thing that happened that was really strange was back in 2006, it came out that some of the drug companies had wanted to put out some information indicating that not all of their clinical trials were successful, and the FDA urged them not to, and this became the subject of congressional hearings.
Right. This is something we've talked a lot about, so, I mean, in a way, it's much more old news on this show, but I think it's, for still a lot of people out there, even just the mention that this was possible is shocking and new, And that's the part that seems unfair and seems like it's, I mean, the amount of advertising, for example, that just keeps highlighting that these drugs work, when they know really comes right down to it, they only work as a placebo, and the FDA knows that too. But that's where the money comes from for the FDA. You know, it's that's how they see, in some cases at least, and you had that quote in the book about how the FDA refers to the pharmaceutical industry as their client.
Right.
Yeah, as opposed to the American people. So what can be done? What should be done about this?
Well, one thing I think that needs to be done is to get rid of the secrecy. These clinical trials need to be made public. All of them need to be published. The data from them need to be made available to independent researchers. That's one thing that I think is critical. Stop the ability of companies that have vested economic interests from being able to own the data, hide the data, put out what they want, keep back what they want. That's one thing. I think needs to be done with that is to de-link the funding of regulatory agencies from direct contributions by the drug companies, so that once again they can become the watchdogs for the American people rather than the watchdogs for the drug companies. I mean, right now, if you think an analogy, imagine that you've got a guard dog and you have a set of thieves, and what you do is you give the thieves the task of feeding the guard dog. It's not going to be a very effective guard dog anymore.
Right. And now I'm, you know, if it's true for the SSRIs, what other drugs could this also be true for? How many drugs are, you know, really barely passable or not passable when you look at, if we could actually get a look at all of the evidence? And I, you hate to think that in a democracy, in a free society, we have to get a FOIA in order to get to the studies that they should have been giving to the doctors so that they knew whether or not they want to prescribe it for their patients.
Absolutely. And, you know, I assume that most of our medications are effective medications. Drugs have done wonders and can do wonders, but there are economic interests in selling the drugs. And that's not the, if you're interested in recouping your money, making your money, that's not going to lead you to do the same things than if you're interested in just evaluating and partially and finding out what works and what doesn't.
Well, I know this isn't the first time the FDA has been busted for withholding important information to, you know, from the very same people to whom they are charged to protect. However, you know, they always say that if you catch somebody, every time that you find a drunk driver is arrested, he's probably already done it 12 other times before the very first time that he's ever arrested. It makes you really wonder how many other times the FDA has done this before and how often that that their model is to do it and then to let the market sort it out. Let the market be the one that decides which drugs make it and don't make it. And I think that's the wrong approach. Why have an FDA at all under those circumstances?
I agree completely. And there does need to be more openness. There needs to be a division of funding so that the FDA is clearly working for the American people and not for the pharmaceutical industry. And there needs to be enforced openness. If a drug is going to be licensed, the research behind it ought to be in the public domain. You need to protect the rights of the patients who participated in the trial so their identity doesn't get revealed. That's easy and it's important, but the basic data, how depressed was this person, what were they given, what were they told, male, female, age, ethnic background, how did they respond, what side effects did they have, all of that should be made available so that people who are independent of the drug company can reanalyze the data.
Are the SSRIs as a class of drugs, are they the most egregious example you've encountered as a researcher into placebos of popular drugs that are really just a placebo effect?
Yeah, I haven't done a lot of, you know, I was never interested in being a drug researcher, so that's someplace that maybe I will be going next. What other drugs will we find to be true of? I kind of backed into this out of my interest in the placebo, and I backed into it with not just the SSRIs, but antidepressants in general, because it doesn't matter what antidepressant you're looking at. They all have the same effect. They all have basically the same lack of effect.
And so as your interest in placebo goes, do we have as a society, if you had to look at the pantheon of the biggest names in pharmaceuticals, do we have in the United States the most placebos? Do we have more of them than, say, other cultures that are using, you know, a tree bark and a squirrel's tail? I mean, where do we rank in terms of our belief in placebos, wittingly or unwittingly?
Well, I think every culture has its placebos, just has different placebos. The tree bark may also be a placebo. So we have different kinds of placebos, and we have placebos that have seem more scientific sounding, and other cultures might have placebos that seem more faith-based. We all have placebos. One thing that we do have is we probably have more active medications that actually are beneficial than most other cultures.
I hope would be true. But I mean, you look at like China and all of the those cures for, say, you know, erectile dysfunction. you know, like grinding up a rhinoceros penis or whatever it is that is the thing that they're supposed to do. And it makes you think, okay, well, no wonder it is still a popular belief. That's the power of the placebo effect. They probably are seeing a benefit. They probably are seeing greater arousal because they believe that that will work.
That's right. And it's just about anything you can imagine has been used as a treatment that we would now consider a placebo and seems to have been used successfully by physicians all over the world, in the West, in the East, anywhere you go.
Now, what's your life like? As you have been talking about this and you've been putting this word out there, how well have you been received? What's the peer reaction like, or the popular reaction to this book and to the series of articles you published before the book came out?
Well, it started out with disbelief. People just couldn't believe it was true. They said, well, but we know these drugs are effective. Everybody knows these drugs are effective. And that's what led me to continue the research. First study I did was on published literature, having had this response of people saying, well, it's hard to believe. My colleagues and I went and used the Freedom of Information Act, got new data, looked at the data more carefully. Little by little, I think the message is seeping in. I know after my most recent meta-analysis of the clinical trials was published, got front page coverage here in the UK in all of the major newspapers, and about 3 months later, a survey was taken of physicians here in the UK, and 44% of them said that on the basis of this research, they would now begin looking for alternative treatments to prescribe to their patients rather than prescribing antidepressants. So I found that very encouraging. And I'm hoping that the publication of my new book in the U.S. coming out next week, I believe, might have a similar effect there.
Again, the book is, and it's a really good read. You make it very accessible. It's not like reading, you know, JAMA or something. You have to feel like you're a PhD level reader. The Emperor's New Drugs, Exploding the Antidepressant Myth. Dr. Irving Kirsch has been our guest. We'll get to your phone calls coming up. But, you know, I guess I know what my email is going to be like after the show. It's going to be because I know what it was like when I mentioned that you were coming. And I was getting emails from people saying, so you're trying to tell me that my depression, which has these pills have made my life livable. I wouldn't even be here if it weren't for these pills. You're trying to tell me that I'm just deluding myself. And I said, first of all, I'm not. Irving Kirsch is. But then I said, blame him. But I was quoting what I knew about the book already to them. And people don't like to be told that they've been being fooled.
Yeah. And I understand that. And one of the things, again, I would say to them is, perhaps we're doing the research wrong. Perhaps we don't really know how to evaluate these drugs. Maybe these drugs are effective for some group of people that we haven't yet identified and not for others. Maybe they're hurting some people and helping other people, and the net effect is a wash when you just look at everybody. But if that's the case, you need to find out who they're hurting and stop giving it to those people, and then maybe the if you study just the people who are left, be a small minority of depressed patients, you might find that you're getting some real benefit. I can't exclude that, and I wouldn't try to exclude that as a possibility.
But so far, no matter how you've sliced it so far, though, you've yet to find the group that benefits.
Yeah, nobody has found it. Nobody has identified. If there is one, there may be one. Nobody has found it. The closest we can come to that, now even that I think is it can be explained as a placebo effect. What we say is theoretically that may be true. Theoretically that may be true, but if it's true, you've got to go out and you've got to find it, and then you've got to look at to the extent that that's true. If there aren't any real differences between drug and placebo overall, and some people are really getting a drug effect, then some people must be getting hurt by the drug, and you've got to find out which is which if you're going to responsibly prescribe the medication.
there are a lot. There are many countries, Ireland being one of them, that have either banned or limited the sale of SSRIs, especially to teenagers, but even to adults. Some of these have already come into question. If a country decides we're going to ban SSRIs, period, and we'll go with something else, we'll wait for the next drug to come along or whatever it is. What do you think would happen?
Well, you can't just ban a treatment without giving an alternative treatment. First of all, you can't just stop giving SSRIs to people who have been taking that. Among other things, many people show withdrawal symptoms, and they can be quite severe. So if you just quit taking SSRIs, you can have some very negative reactions.
Yeah, they got to come down on them like they might any other kind of drug. But I just mean, what do you think would happen societally if people had to give up on the SSRIs?
The question is, will other treatments be provided? If other treatments are provided, if alternatives are provided, then I don't think there would be any problem with that at all. You might have a true decrease in depression rates if the more effective treatments like cognitive behavior therapy are made widely enough available to use when people are depressed. If you don't do anything, depression doesn't go away. You have to do something to treat it.
Actively.
And that we know from our research. People don't get this benefit if they're not even given a placebo. Something has to be done.
But if, and this is the bottom line, as we go into the next hour on Coast to Coast, that if you are suffering from depression and you're listening, you know, to the sound of our voices, you would recommend talk therapy and exercise, focus on that, and wean yourself off of the SSRIs. All things being equal, if they're willing to do that, that talk therapy and exercise will bring about a greater lifetime change, a more permanent change than just staying on the drugs.
Yes, I would add, just do that in consultation with your physician. Don't just try and go off your medication on your own. But look for alternatives.
Yep. Well, that's where we'll leave it. The phones are very active. Everybody's got something to say. The Emperor's New Drugs, Exploding the Antidepressant Myth. Dr. Irving Kirsch is the one who went into this survey, if you missed the very beginning. He went into this research, rather, at the very beginning, expecting to be able to prove that antidepressants worked in at least one group, in the most severely depressed, for example. But the more he did the research and the more studies he began to try to follow and to coordinate, the more he realized that the placebo effect was the only effect that these drugs were having. The only significant effect these drugs were having was from the belief in the people that were taking them that they would have an effect. In effect, they were treating their depression about their depression. They felt better about their depression because they were doing something, and then their depression got better. Is that you? Was that you? Where are you with the Emperor's New Drugs next on Coast to Coast? This is Ian Punnett.